It's allergy season, as so many of us know. We'll find out what's new this morning in the world of fighting allergies. And with us is Dr. Jay Portnoy. He heads the Allergy and Asthma Department at Children's Mercy Hospital. And, Doctor, so good to have you here. Welcome.
Oh, it's great to be here, Steve.
Tell us about the current conditions when it comes to allergies and pollen in the air and all that good stuff.
Well, Steve, as you said, it's allergy season.
Yes,
and most
it is.
People with allergies are well aware of that. The pollen count today is 529.
Is that high?
Well, that is high. It's so high that people who have allergies are very likely to be having problems. The predominant pollens are tree pollens. We're just getting right to the end of the tree season.
Hmm.
Now, I should mention that about a week and a half ago, the pollen count got up to 9,000. We've seen it that high before. That was an all-time record for tree pollen.
Really?
Absolutely. So when I'm asked each year, is this the worst allergy season ever? I can honestly say yes. We've been tracking pollen for the last 15 years here in the Kansas City area. And over that time, the total pollen count has been slowly increasing.
It increases each year?
Each year. It's getting a little bit worse.
So and when people complain, they say, this is the worst allergy season ever, they've got a point.
It literally is. That's exactly right. We know that part of the reason for that is because of the carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere. Some studies have been done at the U.S. Department of Agriculture growing plants in different CO2 environments.
Huh.
Have documented that the total amount of pollen that's produced increases. But even more interesting, the potency of the pollen is higher. So not only are you breathing more pollen, but it's stronger pollen.
So what does the carbon dioxide quotient have to do with what we're talking about here?
It changes the way the plants metabolize the nutrients. CO2, as you know, is a food for plants. They use photosynthesis and CO2 to generate glucose. And so the CO2 levels being higher actually induce them to produce more pollen.
So chances are it's going to be worse next year than it was this year.
Each year it's just a little bit worse. The pollen season's a little bit longer. It's terrible for allergy sufferers, but I call it job security.
Well, for me, I mean, this has been the best allergy season I've had in 15 years, and I started taking my meds a little earlier, and I'm just sailing through it, and I keep on waiting for the wrath of somebody to come down on top of me, and I wake up one morning and be absolutely miserable, but it hasn't happened yet, so I'm feeling okay for once.
Well, it may depend on what you're allergic to.
Well, of course.
If you're allergic to tree pollen, you probably would have had more symptoms. If you're allergic to grass pollen, well, it's just about to start. Grass season is just beginning to start. By next week, we expect to see an explosion of grass pollen. It'll last 3 to 4 weeks, and then by early summer, it'll stop, and then we'll have a clear period of time for about 2 months.
Until the fall comes, and then look out for that then,
right? Until ragweed season.
Yeah. You know, so there's tree allergens, there's mold allergens, weed allergens, food allergens. What are the ones that tend to cause the most problem?
The one that you're allergic to.
Yes. How about the one that causes problems for the most people, to be more precise?
Well, clearly aeroallergens like pollens and molds in the outdoor air bother the majority of people. Between 20 and 30% of people have hay fever, which is nasal allergies. It's caused by pollen and mold exposure outdoors. Also, about 10 to 15% of people have asthma, and asthma can also be triggered by outdoor allergen exposure. So that's a pretty large number of people. You mentioned food allergies. Food allergies are something that affect a much smaller percent of people, but those who it does affect, it really can be a life-changing occurrence.
I read there are 65 million allergy sufferers in this country. I was just staggered by that number, 65 million. Why so many? Are there any theories attached to why so many humans suffer from this stuff?
Well, there's a lot of theories about that. We know that allergy isn't something that we evolved to have. It was really an immune response to parasites like helminths and things like that. But we live in a clean environment now where we're not exposed to the type of parasites that we evolved among. And so as a result, that part of our immune system doesn't have anything to do other than to react to things that really shouldn't be reacting to, like pollens and mold. So it's an abnormal immune response that's occurring because we're we're not exposed to the things that we used to be exposed to.
To what extent, doctor, can medicines and sprays deal with this? I mean, with most people who suffer, will pills and sprays take care of it or not?
Well, that's the thing. Even though the amount of exposure has been increasing, the treatment has also become extremely significantly more effective. So the medications that are available now are really quite effective. There are antihistamines, most of which are over-the-counter and are not sedating. We also have some incredibly effective nasal sprays. There are nasal steroids that are good for congestion and inflammation. Yeah. And there are also nasal antihistamines that are good for itching and sneezing. So by judiciously using a combination of these products, most people can get quite a bit of relief from their symptoms.
You know, I don't understand one of the basic, you know, fundamental questions about allergy treatment. I mean, when you take shots, if I understand right, you are literally injecting allergens into the body to help the body develop immunities against them. And my question is, if that's the case, why don't humans, as we were exposed to allergies over time, develop naturally in immunity to what's around us all the time?
Well, actually, they do to some extent. For example, cat allergy. People who grow up with cats and have allergy to them tend not to have symptoms because they are desensitized just from the ongoing exposure. What happens to a lot of people is the kids will go away to college where they're not exposed to the cat. Then they come back for winter vacation, and now they suddenly are deathly ill from the cat exposure. So natural exposure can, in fact, reduce your sensitivity. The problem is it has to be continuous high-dose exposure, and things like pollens and molds are intermittent and seasonal, so you never get enough exposure to get that immunization effect. That's where allergy shots can be very effective, because that's given in a more controlled, consistent manner in a way that induces an immune response.
Let's go to some callers here and get some folks to call in. Maybe they have questions about what's going on with their own situations, what's happening with the allergy counts in Kansas City. Again, Dr. Jay Portnoy from Children's Mercy Hospital is our guest. Our number here, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You mentioned a minute ago, doctor, that there's all kinds of new drugs that are coming on the market. The existing medications are getting better. What's new? What's happening out in the market that people might look forward to get themselves a little bit of relief?
Well, there's kind of an extension to the allergy shot concept. The concept of allergy shots is that we're immunizing you, giving you a vaccine to the things you're allergic to, like ragweed or grass pollen.
Right.
Recently, a new product was just released. These are actual allergy tablets. These are tablets that contain the grass pollen or the ragweed. They're dissolvable tablets, and they're to be put the patient basically takes them and puts them under their tongue, holds it there for about a minute, and does that once a day, and that can induce the same kind of immune response that getting weekly allergy shots can produce.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I did those shots once, and yeah, I had sort of mixed results with it. But so it's a pill to take the place of some shots, it sounds like.
It's a dissolvable tablet. I've actually tasted one. They taste like meringue. So they're kind of crumbly, and they're a little bit sweet. They're not bad.
Expensive?
I have no idea. They just came out last week. Mm-hmm. So we're still waiting to see what the pharmacies are going to charge and how the health plans are going to cover it.
And this pill helps people with what again specifically?
Well, right now there's two brands. There's ragweed tuck and grass tuck, so grass pollen and ragweed pollen. Mm-hmm. Greer also has Oralair, which is another grass pollen tablet. So those are the only two that are currently available. If you're allergic to tree pollen, that's not going to help you. But the researchers are working on additional tablets for different allergens.
And these things, you have to take them continuously throughout the season to make them effective?
You actually have to take them on a daily basis year-round for between 3 to 4 years in order to get full effect from it. The reason that they're sublingual is because if you swallow a grass pollen tablet, the acid in your stomach will break it down and it won't work. So it has to get absorbed through the lymphatics under the tongue in order to be effective.
Huh. Again, our phone number here, we want to know how badly this allergy season is treating you. Maybe you have questions for Dr. Portnoy about new treatments that are coming online. 816-235-2888. Again, that's 816-235-2888. This is a big breakthrough, it sounds like. This is a big deal.
Well, it's actually been in use in Canada and Europe for over a decade now. So it's not actually all that new, but it is new to the United States, where we've not had sublingual tablets before.
Hmm. And will this make shots irrelevant at some point? Take shots, you know, off the list of remedies for allergies?
I don't think so. You know, the advantage of the shots is, of course, there are many more allergens available to immunize a patient, too. You might be allergic to a lot of different things, and right now we only have two different kinds of tablets. In addition to that, the shots are given once a week for the first 4 to 5 months, and then they're spread out so that eventually it's once a month,
mm-hmm.
whereas the tablets are given every day.
Mm-hmm.
So some people might not want to have to do something every single day, but you know, going in for a shot once a month might be more acceptable to them. So I think there's room for both of these types of treatments.
You know, is it true that as people age, that they become more resistant to allergies, or is that not the case?
Allergies tend to decrease as you get older. The onset of allergies is usually in early childhood, about 6 years of age. They will last for about 3 to 4 decades, so usually into your 30s and 40s before they start to decrease. That's really the advantage of the allergy shots, because if you can get rid of the allergies in 3 to 4 years with injections, then you can save yourself 30 years of having allergies.
Why does the body become more resistant to allergies as it age? That's the first thing I've heard,
yeah.
First benefit of aging that I've come across. I've been looking for one.
Well, it's just the way the immune system changes over time. We just become less immune to things as we get older, and that includes allergens.
Okay, let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. David from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on with Dr. Jay Portnoy. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me on. I had a question. I recently heard a rumor that local bee honey was effective for allergies.
I've heard that too.
Comments were on there.
Local bee honey, Dr. Portnoy, what do you think?
It's tasty. The thing about bee honey is that you're eating it. You're not using it sublingually, so it goes into the stomach where the acid would break it down. So the allergens aren't going to actually make it into the systemic system to cause an immunization effect. In addition, bees tend to gather honey pollen from flowers, and flowers are not the types of plants that cause allergies. Allergies are caused by plants that don't make flowers. They're wind-pollinated. It's called anemophilous plants. That's why we call them weeds, because they don't make flowers, whereas the bees tend to go to the flowery plants that have the nectar, and those plants are entomophilous, like entomology, like insect-pollinated. But those are not the ones that tend to cause the allergy, so it's a different kind of pollen.
So the answer to David's question is don't bother.
It's probably not going to be effective if you happen to be allergic to pollen as an immunization effect, but it is very tasty.
David, I'm sorry about that.
No, that thanks for answering the question. It was just kind of funny. It's just kind of a coincidence, because this season I haven't really had allergies as bad as I have in the past, and I was kind of attributing it to that, but it must just be a coincidence.
Whatever it takes. Does one's mental toughness play a factor in all this, Dr. Portnoy?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. How so?
Well, you know, if you have symptoms, how you respond to those symptoms is determined in part by how bad the symptoms are, but also how you respond to them. So you can let your nose bother you, or you can not worry about it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it also has to do with the amount of exposure you have, how much time you spend indoors versus outdoors, and the medications that you take, which over the years have become more and more effective.
That's interesting, because, you know, some years, and I know a lot of our listeners can relate to this, but some years this stuff would bother me so much I would just be so weary. That was my main symptom. I couldn't even, like, feel my legs after a while. I'd be so tired. Is that unusual?
No, it's actually pretty common. And one of the most disturbing things that happens in patients who have rhinitis or hay fever and asthma is sleep deprivation. If you can't breathe through your nose, then you don't sleep well at night. You get grouchy. You have problems falling asleep during the daytime. It can cause major problems.
Okay, 816-235-2888. Susan from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on Up to Date. Susan, nice to have you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, my daughter has allergies real bad, and they've told her she needs to, you know, get the shots, but she just hasn't got them started. But the last couple of times that she's gotten sick with her allergies. When she went to the doctor, just like last week, they said, well, you have a virus. So what's the difference? I mean, how does an allergy turn into a virus? Or are these two different things? Or, I mean, I'm kind of confused because she's really been sick this, you know, this spring time.
Okay. Difference between an allergy and a virus.
Yeah.
And they really are two totally different things. An allergy is something like a pollen or a mold in the air that gets into your nose or your lungs and triggers an inflammatory response. A virus is an infection. It's like a cold virus. It gets into your system and causes an infection. And the symptoms are a little bit different. Usually you get a sore throat, you get fever. The nasal mucus turns kind of cloudy to green or yellowish in color, and you really feel kind of sick. It usually lasts for 7 to 10 days and then slowly resolves, whereas allergies, instead of being pain and fever and achiness and all of that stuff, allergies tend to be more itchy, sneezy, and runny. And so, and they tend to last for longer. They'll go up for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, certain times of the year. So rather than being episodic, they're more persistent. So that's kind of the difference. But you're right. It can be a subtle difference.
So even though she may have thought it started out as a virus, it really, I mean, as an allergy, she thought it really was a virus.
You know, allergic people can also get a virus. You can have both.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for taking my question. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, good I hope luck, she Susan. Feels better.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I hope she feels better, too.
All right.
So, thank
Take
you.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're talking about new products on the market. I've also read, is that what we talked about before, Auralair and Grastec?
Yes.
That's what we were talking about before?
Yes.
Those are the names of those these new drugs that are out that you put under your tongue and that kind of thing?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. And then there's another product, Ragwitek.
Right. Ragwitek is just the ragweed version of the dissolvable tablets,
okay.
Whereas Grastec is the grass version of the products.
Okay. Back to some calls here. Let's go to Jake from Kansas City, Missouri. Jake, you're on up to date. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just curious, a year ago at 65, mine kicked back in with a vengeance, and the symptoms were more in my eyes. I was elbow deep. Two or three times, and I said, this is nuts. I went to my ophthalmologist, just drove over there, and he said, Zaditor, and I tried it, and it didn't work, and then he said, Pataday, and it seemed to work. So what happens in your eyes, and what is the difference between Zaditor and Pataday? You know, why would one be effective and the other not? Are they different gigs?
Yeah. That's a good question, and it's something that many doctors tend to overlook in patients who have a lot of nasal symptoms. They fail to ask if you have eye symptoms also, because eyes are usually just as bothersome as the nose, but people tend not to focus on them as much. Allergic eye disease is called allergic conjunctivitis, and you can have that just as likely as you can have nasal allergies. The treatment, of course, is to avoid exposure to the things you're allergic to. Obviously, you can't get rid of all the pollen, but if there's specific things, then that can be helpful. The two eye drops that you mentioned are the two most popular ones that are out right now. One of them is an antihistamine, and the other one is kind of it's hard to say exactly what it is. It's called the generic is ketotifen. That's what Zaditor is. And it's sort of a combination of antihistamine mast cell stabilizer. So the mechanism of how it works is actually not totally understood.
Mm-hmm.
But they are just a little bit different.
Why are most of these drugs, not all of them, why are they prescription only? Why aren't they over-the-counter?
Actually, Zaditor is over-the-counter.
Okay, there you go.
Pataday or Patanol is a prescription, and part of that has to do with how the drug companies position them for marketing purposes. Usually, if they're still on patent, then they keep them as prescriptions because they can charge more. Once they go off patent, then they tend to want them to go over the counter. So it's really more of a marketing decision than a safety or, you know, medical decision.
Well, that doesn't seem to be right to me. I mean, why is that the way the world works?
I wish I knew.
Yeah, but that's the way it works.
That is the way it works.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Nathan from Kansas City, Missouri. Nathan, you're on UpToDate. Our topic, allergies. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I was wondering, you mentioned use cats as an example of how one can instilled a resistance to kind of the symptoms of allergies after prolonged exposure. And I was wondering if there is any sort of, if there is any way of applying that to food allergies. Like, can one slowly introduce bits of the food they're allergic to into their system, and over time they become, like, resistant to the symptoms, or...
Ah, okay. Well, that's the holy grail of treating food allergy. Right now, the most common food allergy that we deal with is peanut allergy.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, there's kind of an explosion of that right now. The prevalence of peanut allergy has essentially doubled in the last 8 years.
Why?
Good question. I wish I knew why. There's all kinds of theories about it, but nobody really understands exactly why peanut allergy has become more prevalent, but it really has. And because it's becoming such a significant epidemic, there's been a lot of effort to determine if there's a way to desensitize or treat people to peanut allergy. A number of centers have been doing research with a variety of ways of doing that. There have been attempts to inject the peanut into the patient the way we would inhalant allergens. There's also been sublingual desensitization to peanut by the sublingual drops. I don't know about dissolvable tablets. There's even been a patch that you would put on the outside of your skin, and then the peanut would be absorbed.
I was going to ask you, you've heard about that. Yeah.
Right.
Does it work?
So those studies have been done on peanut-sensitive patients, and it is possible to reduce somebody's sensitivity to peanuts. So somebody who's exquisitely sensitive can be made less sensitive. In general, none of the patients become totally unsensitive, so they all remain somewhat sensitive to the peanut and will have a systemic reaction to it if they eat enough peanut. The other problem is that the desensitization is only temporary. You have to keep eating the peanut in order to maintain the desensitization. As soon as you stop doing that for a week or so, you resensitize, and then you become then you're at risk of having an allergic reaction to it again. And so they haven't figured out how to create a prolonged reduction of peanut allergy by doing any of these methods. So none of them have really turned out to be the holy grail or the goal to work that effectively.
I hope that helps, Nathan.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's grab a couple more calls here. Barbara from Leawood. Barbara, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, I've never had full-blown allergies. I've just had major sensitivities, and I just would get minor kind of reactions. And so regular over-the-counter meds would, you know, help in the past. Well, this year, I'm 41 now, and I've heard that it's possible to actually develop allergies as you get older. And I'm 41, and this season has been the worst in like 10 years for me. And my daughter, who's 11, also is having a really bad allergy season as well. So I'm just wondering, for the sublingual that you're talking about, is that something that, is available for, like, she's 95 pounds and is 5'1". Like, is that something that would be available for children? And also, is it possible to develop an allergy to pollens later in life, or is it more so that just this season just has to happen?
Well, let's take
really
these one at a time so we don't snow them with too many questions here, Barbara. Doctor, go ahead.
Yeah, well, as I said at the beginning of this show, this is the worst allergy season we've ever had, so congratulations. You're having allergy symptoms now on the worst season.
Yeah.
It is possible to develop allergies at any age, and new allergies can develop in anyone at any time. It depends on, you know, your immune response as well as the amount of exposure. In terms of the new sublingual tablets as a treatment for it, one thing I didn't mention is the approval age. The Ragwitek is actually approved down to age 18, which doesn't mean that it would be dangerous or wrong to for somebody under that age to take it. It's just that that's the age that the FDA has approved it for. The Grasstec, I don't know if it's 18 or 12, but I know that it's not approved for very young children either, but again, that doesn't mean that it wouldn't work or that it's not safe. It just means that that's the approval age. So those are things that could be considered, but the most important thing I would recommend is that you see an allergist, get tested, and then get the recommendations from your allergist.
Okay, great. Thanks. Good. I know sometimes the meds are, you know, based on your weight and height,
right,
and all that stuff, so I didn't know if the sublingual would be also, so. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank
Good
you
luck,
so much.
Barbara. Okay.
Thank you.
One last one here. Stacy from Olathe. Stacy, go quickly if you would.
Yes. A similar question to the bee pollen. I know essential oils are starting to become very popular, and specifically the combination of lavender, lemon, and peppermint oils to treat seasonal allergies, lavender being the antihistamine of the three, and I wondered if your doctor had anything to say about that. And I will take my answer off here. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Stacey.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any good evidence that they have a medical effect, but if you feel better using them, then certainly go for it. They probably aren't going to cause any harm.
Okay. With that, we're going to end our segment here. I want to thank Dr. Jay Portnoy from Children's Mercy Hospital. Thanks for coming in, and what great counsel. I sure appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Not happy to hear it's the worst allergy season ever, and next year's even going to be worse. Not good.